Only those who render unreserved, uninterrupted, favorable service unto the lotus feet of Krishna, who carries the wheel of the chariot in his hand, can know the Creator of the universe in his full glory, power, and transcendence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Only the pure devotees can know the transcendental name, form, and activities of Lord Krishna. Due to their being completely freed from the reactions of fruitive work and mental speculation, the pure devotees have nothing to derive as personal profit from their unalloyed service to the Lord. They render incessant service to the Lord spontaneously without any reservation. Everyone within the creation of the Lord is rendering service to the Lord indirectly or directly. No one is an exception to this law of the Lord. Mukam karoti bachalam bangum langayate girim yat kripatam aham bandhem sri gurum dinatharanam. As explained in Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Suta Goswami, a description of the various incarnations of the Lord as he appears in various places, in various times, to various personalities. Krishna explains in Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tatmanam srijamyaham. The Lord appears in this world millennium after millennium for the purpose of reclaiming the souls who have left his divine loving service to try to make some comfortable, happy arrangement in a world of birth and death. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that there is no reason for him to come to this material world, which is anything like the reason we take birth. Karmana daiva netrena. That according to our previous karma, someone can make that sound. According to our previous karma, we are forced by the laws of nature to enter into a particular womb within the 8,400,000 species of life within creation. We take birth as a product of our own previous karma. And after we take birth, we have to accept a variety of pleasures and pains, happiness and sorrows, according to our previous karma, and according to the karma that we are creating today, we will have to enjoy or suffer those material reactions tomorrow. So yes, man is the maker of his own destiny. And every aspect of our life is a reaction to what we have done. We are responsible. And this situation of material entanglement is so difficult to overcome that only by the help of God Himself is it possible. So Krishna comes to this world again and again to teach us through his words, through the various meanings of his pastimes, which are explained by his devotees, how we can attain the perfection of life. And first of all, what is the perfection of life? Until we are convinced that this material existence is not our true home, it is not a place with any hope for real happiness, we will not strive for higher realizations. Therefore, Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita in such a way to convince us that the only sensible, intelligent way of life is a way of devotion, devotion to Him. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yobiti tatvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mameti sorajana. By simply understanding in truth the divine nature of Krishna's appearance in this world and His activities, we are freed from the clutches of birth and death. We transcend all suffering. No matter how many wonderful arrangements we make, we cannot change the nature of the world. It is a place where there is danger at every step. Everything can be going just perfectly and wonderfully according to all our desires and expectations. And the next moment, there can be heart attack. Or one of our loved ones could have a severe crisis. And in that situation, no matter what we've done throughout our whole life, we cannot find even a grain of happiness. This is the world we live in. And so many people are trying to avoid these problems, but they cannot. It's like swimming in the ocean and trying to avoid getting wet. Is it possible? If you're in the ocean, you're wet. If you're in material existence, you're subjected to all sorts of suffering. If you want to become dry, you cannot do it in the ocean. You have to get out of the ocean. If you want to be happy, really, truly happy, and avoid the struggles of pain, you have to transcend the material existence. You have to become detached, which means to get out. But if you are drowning in the center of the ocean, what hope do you have of getting out? It's too deep, and it's too wide, and it's too long. Only if someone throws you a life raft and pulls you upon the ship can you get out. Similarly, material existence is like an ocean. And only by the mercy of the Lord. He comes to this world. Krishna Himself enters into the ocean of material existence. But not like us. He is transcendental to the modes of material nature. He has no karma to receive. He has no desires to fulfill in this world, save and except to throw us the life raft of His mercy and to help us out. But we find that in this age of Kali Yuga, practically 99% of human population simply will not accept the life raft. Why? Because their hands, their legs, every limb of their body, their mind, their intelligence is too busy trying to get dry in the ocean. We're so busy trying to find relief from the sufferings of material existence, we do not have time to take the way out. And Krishna, He appeared in this world directly in His original personal transcendental form. Hardly 5,000 years ago. And through his wonderful pastimes, which are revealed in the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Puranas, through his teachings of Bhagavad Gita, through his holy names.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And especially through his empowered servants, his devotees, he's offering that life raft to all of us. Come out of the material existence. When Krishna appeared in this world, it was very instructive. And the great acharyas explain how we can understand the Lord's appearance. We will be describing in more detail tomorrow. Tomorrow is Janamashtami. But we should prepare ourselves for this Janamashtami. Janamashtami means the day that Krishna is born, the day that he appears. God is never born, is beginningless and endless. But just as the sun rises in the morning, it sets in the evening, the Lord appears to our vision at a certain time, and it is called his birth. And then he disappears for our vision, which is called his disappearance. But actually, Krishna is always somewhere, shining the light of his causeless mercy through his divine personal presence. But you know that Devaki and Vasudev, they were married by the arrangement of Gargara Muni. And after the wedding ceremony, Kamsa was bringing his sister to Vasudev's kingdom. And the demigods, they were very much anxious that Krishna come soon. So they spoke in the sky, and they said, Kamsa, you are a fool. The eighth son of your sister, Devaki, will kill you. So Kamsa, who was a great demon, who had conquered the whole universe, he was so afraid for his life, because after all, what's the use of conquering the whole universe if you cannot live to enjoy it? So this was potentially the frustration of all of his plans. He was willing and ready to kill his own sister. He took her by the hair and drew his sword and was about to sever her head. Just see how people too much materially attached, what sort of abominable atrocities they are willing to do to protect their own sense gratification. And actually, none of us really know how demoniac we might be until we're put in that situation. Vasudev convinced Kamsa that you have nothing to fear from your sister Devaki. It is her sons. I promise you, I will bring you each and every one of those sons, and you can do as you like with them. They were put in the prison, and then released, actually released first. The first son that was born was Kirtiman. And Kamsa was thinking, when he was brought the son, that I have nothing to worry for this first son. It is the eighth. So you take the son back. But then Kamsa came back into his association of his ministers and his friends, who were all terribly materialistic and demoniac. And somehow or other they convinced him that any of these sons can be the cause of great trouble. And Narada Muni also, in order to speed the appearance of Krishna, he also added some words of encouragement to Kamsa. So Kamsa called Vasudeva and Devaki back. He killed the first son ruthlessly and then put them in prison. And the next year there was a second son, and Kamsa killed, and a third son. He killed six of the children of Devaki. Now there are many ways of perceiving what we are meant to learn through the killing of these eight children. I mean these six children. But we have to search deeply into the Bhagavatam and the commentaries of the great souls to understand what this all means. And today I'd like to speak briefly about the story of the eight sons that were killed, or the six sons that were killed by Kamsa after taking birth from the womb of Devaki. Long ago, there is a great sage named Marichi. Marichi, it is described that he represents the mind. Marichi had six sons. He himself was a son of Lord Brahma. At a certain particular time, by the Yogamaya potency of Lord Vishnu, Brahma became attracted to his own daughter, whose name was Vak. And he actually approached her, and she ran away. We should know that Brahma is transcendental. But the Supreme Lord wanted to show all living beings how careful we have to be, because the power of Maya is so strong that even if such a great soul can fall into illusion by the appearance of Maya, what is our position? Therefore, we must be very strict, we must be very cautious, and we must take shelter of good association at all times in our life. We cannot be callous. We cannot think that everything is all right. Because in this world, nothing is ever all right. Maya is imminently there, ready to steal your intelligence away. So Lord Brahma, who is actually a great soul, was willing to accept whatever position Krishna wanted him to be put in, to teach good lesson to society. So actually he was not at fault. But the six sons of Marichi, they laughed at him when they saw him behaving like this way. And because they laughed at him, this was Vaishnav Aparad, committed an offense to Lord Brahma. And as a reaction, they had to fall from their saintly position in the abode of the demigods, and they had to take birth as demons. They became the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And after that, they became the sons of the son of Hiranyakashipu, the grandsons, a demon of the name of Kalanemi. And this Kalanemi was such an enemy of the Supreme Lord that after the churning of the ocean of milk, when there was a great war between the demigods and the demons, Kalanemi was riding on a lion, and he had a trident in his hands, and with all his power, as he saw the Supreme Lord Narayan coming down on his bird carrier Garuda, he threw this trident to try to slaughter the Lord. But Vishnu, who is unconquerable, Ajita, and he easily defeated Kalanemi and killed him. Meanwhile, the spiritual master of the demons, he took the dead body of Kalanemi and he gave him a special mystical herb called Sanjivani. And he brought Kalanemi back to life. And Kalanemi was very much hateful toward Vishnu. And he vowed that he would fight him again and get revenge. So Kalanemi began to perform great tapasya, intense tapasya, in order to satisfy Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma appeared. And he said, I want the vow that that no demigod, no living being of this creation can kill me, and that I will have great strength to conquer all directions. So he was given this benediction. And then Kalanemi took his next birth in the womb of the wife of Maharaj Ugrasena of Mathura. And his name was Kamsa. Rio!
Rio!
Kamsa. He became such a powerful demon. He conquered all the demons throughout the whole universe. He would challenge them and say, if you defeat me, I will be your servant, and if I defeat you, you have to be my servant till death. So every asura throughout the universe became his humble servant, willing to give their lives for him. But in his previous birth, Kalanemi had six sons. The six sons of Marichi, who became the sons of Hiranyakashipu, became the grandsons of Hiranyakashipu as the sons of Kalanemi. And they were somewhat rebellious. They went on their own to perform tapasya without the permission of Hiranyakashipu. And you know, someone who gets control, the more you get, the more you want. The more you get power and control in this world, the more you feel everything must be controlled by me. You become meticulous. That is human nature. The nature of the ego, ahankar. And when you have some control over something or someone, it is intolerable to lose it. In fact, you take offense. It is like a disgrace. So Hiranyakashipu had conquered the whole universe. You know how disgraced and offended he was when he could not control Prahlad, his son. Well, anyways, he was so angry with his grandsons that you dare to perform yajna to a demigod? You worship anyone else except me? What would you call it? Asura aparad. He became so angry with them that he cursed them. That I curse you that in your next birth you will be killed by your own father. So Kamsa, Kalanemi became Kamsa, and the six sons, grandsons of Hiranyakashipu, took birth in the womb of Devaki. They were transferred by the arrangement of Yogamaya. Now, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, and the other great commentators of Srimad Bhagavatam explains that originally they were the six sons of Marichi. Marichi represents the mind. And these six sons represent the rebellious tendencies of the mind, the demoniac propensities of the mind. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsara. Lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, and illusion. Devaki, her womb represents bhakti or devotion. Rupa Goswami explains, Anyabilashita shunyam jnana karmanyaka anukulyena krishna nushilanam bhaktarutama. That real bhakti, pure bhakti, is without any tinge of karma or jnana. Pure bhakti, it was without any of these tendencies of the six enemies. Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Such a person cannot understand in truth the transcendental appearance of Krishna. Krishna does not appear in the womb of such a devotee. As we are reading here from the Bhagavatam, only a pure devotee. Only that person who has conquered these six enemies. So Devaki's womb representing bhakti. First, these six enemies had to be killed. The enemies born of the mind before Krishna, before her womb was fit for Krishna to appear within. So in this way, the demigods, as well as Narada Muni, he knew that these saintly persons, because of their rebelliousness and their offensiveness, they had become materialistic and demoniac. And after they're killed, they can be liberated and be brought back eventually to their transcendental position. So actually, by Narada telling Kamsa that you should kill all the sons because you don't know which one Krishna will come, he was actually showing his great mercy upon those six children. And of course, Kamsa, he did not know that he was doing them great service. Sometimes we must understand that there is a deeper purport than what we see with our eyes. Our nature is, we see everything in a very superficial way. But underlying everything within this world, in the life of a devotee, is the will of Krishna, is the plan of Krishna. And his plan is always good, ultimately, if we just live according to that plan, with direction from the great souls. So we must somehow or other destroy these six enemies within our hearts. Only then does Krishna appear within our lives. So after these six children were killed by Kamsa, then Baladev, Lord Balaramji, appeared within the womb of Devaki. He was personally sent there to prepare the way for Krishna, to make Devaki's womb, after giving birth to six demons and casting them out, Balaram's job was to make that womb a very comfortable and suitable place for his Lord and Master Krishna to appear. Balaram is the original guru. The spiritual master, who is his representative, teaches us how to kill these six enemies of lust, anger, envy, pride, greed, and illusion. But even after they are extinguished in our heart, still we require the help of the spiritual master to prepare our mind, to prepare our consciousness in such a way that is a pleasing place for Krishna to appear. So Balaramji prepared Devaki's womb very nicely, and then he was transferred to the womb of Rohini, who was actually his eternal mother. And then Krishna appeared within the womb of Devaki. And when he appeared, Devaki, she became effulgent and so beautiful. In fact, the whole prison cell became so lit up with such a beautiful light and aura. And Devaki herself became the embodiment of such beauty that Kamsa and everyone knew that now Vishnu has appeared. And they were simply waiting for the moment when they would have to face to face meet with the Supreme Personality of God. Janmashtami means not just the historical, astrological time when Krishna did appear within this world, but it means to us that we should understand the process by which Krishna can appear within our own lives. We must purify our hearts. Bhaktyamam abhijanati yavan yashtashmitattvatah. Unless our hearts are pure, we cannot understand Krishna's appearance. We cannot understand his activities. We cannot be free from suffering. We can take to a religion. We can affiliate with a particular congregation. We can perform many rituals. But ultimately, we must purify our hearts. That is the whole purpose of the association of devotees. It is the actually only purpose of taking to a process of religion or performing any ritual or doing any sadhana to become pure. We should not think that religion is simply meant to live a better life in this world. Factually, you will get that if you live religiously. You'll get a better life in this world. Abhrama bhuvanar loka punaravartanorjana mamupetyatu kondya punarajanmana vidyate. But whatever nice arrangement you make in this world will culminate in death, old age, disease. You cannot avoid it. Real religion is to reawaken our eternal consciousness. And that comes through purification of the mind, purification of the heart. It comes through unalloyed, unmotivated devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We do not want to show off, because what, you think Krishna is impressed by what we can do, by how much money we can give, by how many austerities we perform, by how many days we can fast, by how many hours we can stand on the tips of our toes, by how long we can stand on our heads. by how wonderfully we could chant mantras, by how much we could memorize scriptures. We do these things not to be recognized. We do these things to become purified. And we're purified when we do it with humility and sincerity. So this is what real religion means. It is not just like having a pass that I am a Christian, or I am a Jew, or I am a Muslim, or a Jain, or a Parsi, or a Buddhist, or a Hindu. That's what religion is today. I go to this church and you go to that church. Mine is nicer than yours. Maybe it is. But that's not the purpose of religion. The purpose is to purify our hearts. It is a process by which we can attract the mercy of the Lord. And Krishna is only attracted to purity. He's only attracted to humility. He's only attracted to sincerity. So that is why Srila Prabhupada insisted, and all the great acharyas insisted, that you must follow these four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. This is essential. Because as we are doing our sadhana, we're becoming purified. If you engage in these activities or other such materialistic activities, you just further pollute yourself. We want to kill these enemies. We don't want to give them strength. Every time you give in to irreligious activities, you are giving the enemies within your mind greater strength and longevity. And they will conquer you. Therefore, with the holy name, which is the weapon within this age of Kali Yuga, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given everyone who will accept, with the holy name, we must destroy these enemies from within and without. And with the association of devotees, hearing the transcendental names, pastimes, and activities of the Lord, we surround ourselves, our intelligence, our mind, by protection from the divisive means by which these enemies are always trying to drag our intelligence away. So it is necessary that we learn the proper process of associating with devotees, which is simple: to hear from them, to serve them, and to be humble and to not criticize. And to chant and to dance with them. And we don't want any prestige amongst them. We don't want to show off what we can do to anyone. We simply want to do the best we possibly can for purification. And our sadhana must be very strict if we want to be purified. It is a process given by the Lord through His devotees. Take to the process sincerely. That is true religion. To become selfless, to become a servant. Ultimately, Krishna took birth. And in Mathura, Krishna killed Kamsa. When he was living in Dwarka, many years later, Devaki, his beloved mother, she worshipped him because she knew that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And she understood his inconceivable powers. But still, she had so much affection for her previous six sons who had been killed by Kamsa. I guess it's human nature that a mother never forgets a child, even if that child dies throughout her life. And even great, saintly, purified devotees like Devaki, she still had that natural, motherly, loving attitude. So she requested Lord Sri Krishna and Balaramji that, "I have heard that the son of your guru, Sandipani Muni, who died long before, you brought him back to life and brought him back to your Guruji. Can you also bring my six sons back to me?" So Krishna went to Sutala Loka. He knew exactly where to find them. That is the abode of Bali Maharaj. And Bali Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead with great grandeur and opulence. And then he offered himself that, "I am your eternal servant. How can I serve you?" And Krishna and Balaram said, "Please, our Mataji wants those six sons back." So he said, "Yes, here they are." So Krishna brought them back to Dwarka. And although this was many long years after their birth, Devaki, when she saw them and when she touched them, she became so overwhelmed with motherly affection that milk started to flow from her sacred breasts. And she took each of those six sons and fed them the milk from her breast. And upon tasting that milk, each of those sons were liberated and became completely transcendental purified souls and returned to the planet of great saintly persons from where they had originally fallen. When Krishna took birth in the prison of Kamsa, he appeared with four arms, decorated as the Lord of Vaikuntha. And he told Vasudev that, "Take me to Gokul Dham and bring me to the house of Nanda and Yashoda." Now it was cold that night and it was rainy that night. And it was a long way. So Devaki was thinking that, "I should give him some nice milk to nourish him so that my baby child will not be hungry during the long journey to Gokul." So she fed Krishna with her own milk. And because Krishna took the milk from her breast, it became Mahaprasad. So when these six sons of Marichi were given the chance to drink that milk, they were nourished by the Mahaprasad of Lord Krishna. And by tasting it once, they became completely purified and returned to their original abode. We must always aspire to accept the prasad of the Lord. By controlling our senses, by chanting the holy names, by associating with devotees, and by taking the Lord's prasad in all these various forms, not only do we conquer the mind, but we purify the mind. And then the mind becomes our best friend rather than the agent of our worst enemies. Krishna says in Gita that one who can control the mind is the best friend. But for one who fails to do so, the very mind is the worst enemy. And the process of purification is to control the mind and the senses. Sarvapadiva niramuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktaruchyate. And we have been given such a wonderful method of controlling the mind, purifying the mind, of feeding the mind with Krishna's prasad. By seeing the beautiful form of the deities in a spirit of humility and devotion, we are drinking the Lord. By chanting the holy names with great enthusiasm, we are drinking prasad with our tongues. Taking nice prasad of the deities, we are also receiving Krishna's prasad in the form of foodstuffs. By hearing the wonderful pastimes of the Lord from the lips of those who are genuinely and sincerely in a mood of humble service to the Lord, by hearing the instructions of Krishna through Gita, through Bhagavatam, and by hearing the beautiful sound of the holy names, we are drinking Krishna's prasad through our ears. By using our hands to engage in menial services, whatever it may be, cleaning the floor, making the garlands, cooking the bhoga, playing the mridanga, karatals, lifting our arms in kirtan. Receiving the Lord's mercy, His prasad, through the process of devotional service, through our body. By experiencing the wonderful fragrance of the incense and the flowers that have been offered at the lotus feet of Sri Radha Gopinath, we are receiving His prasad through our sense of smell. In this way, this Krishna consciousness movement of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a movement of simply giving and accepting prasad, Krishna's mercy. And it is for this reason that Srila Prabhupada said that this process is very simple. We are just chanting, dancing and feasting, just taking nice prasad. And by nourishment of this prasad, gradually these six enemies are removed from the mind, and our very mind becomes the sanctified place by which Krishna appears. And then the true celebration of Janmashtami is revealed to all of us. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.